outside of the Bible, the greatest two documents that have ever been penned are the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence. And the reason those two documents have lasted for 230 years is because they were written on the knees of the framers.
This is the voice of the Colorado Liberty Movement.
I'm not a sixth grader. It's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I study the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated.
Live from Studio 56, this is Grassroots Radio Colorado.
Let's be clear about one thing. We're not here to rebrand a party. We're not here to put a fresh coat of rhetorical paint on our party. We're not here to abandon our principles in a contest of government giveaways. We're here to rebuild a country.
Now, Chris Cook with Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.
Freedom, liberty, truth.
American woman said, get away. American woman, listen what I say.
Welcome to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. It's Tuesday, so that must mean office hours with the chairman. We've got Steve House, the chairman of the Colorado Republican Party, on the line. Steve, welcome to Grassroots Radio.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. Last time we spoke to you, you were in an airport. You were in the airport waiting to go to the RNC spring meeting in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm a little jealous, actually, because I think it rained the entire time. So how was the meeting?
It was great. I think, you know, any long business meeting is going to have moments where you're like, I just want to go home. You know, I'm tired. And, you know, especially when you're talking about, you know, one subject for three or four straight days. But, you know, in general, I was impressed with what I saw. I enjoyed seeing several of the presidential candidates speak and listening to what they had to say and enjoying some, you know, small roundtable type discussions with them to understand a little bit better about what they're all about. I think those things are good. I also think it's great to interact with chairs from other states, because you get an opportunity to understand the challenges that they have.
Right.
And you can kind of compare notes and see what's going on. And there's states that run their businesses substantially different than we do. And I think those are all great things to get out of the way and learn and, you know, really spend some time developing relationships with people that we're going to be working with later on down the road.
What is the real purpose of these meetings? And they have them quarterly. The RNC has these meetings quarterly to bring the states all together, the state chairman and so forth, and do that. What is the real purpose of these meetings?
I don't think it's any different than a state executive committee meeting or even a county executive committee meeting. Essentially, you're bringing your membership together. A little bit bigger scale with the RNC meeting, because there's, you know, what, 168 members or something.
Right.
And, you know, you bring them together. You talk about everything from resolutions to conventions to debates to, you know, funding organizations to even occasionally some issues. You know, and it's really a lot about relationship development, because what you're trying to do is cross-pollinate best practices between one county or one state party and another. And so a lot of it is about sharing of best practices and discussions.
Sure. Now, while you were down there, you're speaking of debates. The news broke while you were down there about George Stephanopoulos's donations to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
What was the reaction? I mean, was it fairly immediate? A lot of people on phones, or how did? What was the reaction in the room?
You know, I think we, as a party, have gotten so, I don't know, jaundiced, if you will, to the whole media concept that, you know, first of all, people aren't surprised. I mean, it's George Stephanopoulos. I mean, he worked for the Clintons. He was close to them for a long time, and then he had a falling apart with them. But it isn't all that. It isn't surprising to us on the Republican Party to see media do something hypocritical, extremely hypocritical. And I don't think people were too surprised by it. They're more focused on what do we do about Hillary Clinton and what Hillary Clinton is doing and has done and would do if she were president.
Right, which of course we will be talking about. In fact, I'll spend a good portion of tonight's show after I get off with you talking about that. But Stephanopoulos was slated to be the moderator for more than one of the debates, was he not?
you know, I don't think that's ever been officially announced. We ask those kind of questions, and, you know, because these debates that are being done in the Republican presidential primaries, and maybe Stephanopoulos would have been done, would have been used for debates outside of the presidential primaries that we're going through, but certainly in the primaries debates that we're doing, the RNC has, you know, right of refusal and an opportunity to help pick the moderators, because it is a Republican-sanctioned debate. The first time the RNC's ever sanctioned a debate are these debates this year.
Really?
So it's not going to be people that we're not comfortable with.
This is, whoa, back up for a second, because this is the first time, and it's not like this is the first time we've had more than one person in the field running for the nomination, and we've had debates on the GOP side before. Why would this be the first time that we sanctioned a debate?
Well, I mean, in the past, the way debates have worked is networks will, you know, talk to candidates, set dates up, and, you know, host debates, which are good for the candidates because they get an opportunity to go someplace and stand on a stage and answer questions and make their case. Well, it's never been the case that the RNC or the DNC, if you will, had an opportunity to say, look, we're going to control the debate process, which requires that you get the candidates to agree to let the RNC manage the process. And that's really what's happening. The RNC is managing the process of, you know, these debates, not because they're going to do anything radically different, but there's a lot less debates scheduled. And, you know, I think in the process, you know, more control over moderator and, you know, things like that. Although, you know, the networks are going to have their own, you know, management style questions and stuff like that, but it's definitely not just the media making the decision anymore.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess I didn't realize that the media had been entirely in control of that process. And of course, maybe that's why we've had such bad candidates in the past, because they're choosing the venue. They're choosing how our folks get portrayed, basically. So I'm glad to hear that we have a voice. Who within the RNC is actually managing this process?
There's a guy that is the head of strategy for the RNC. His name is Sean Spicer. He's a very, very bright guy. I had a chance to spend some time with him last week and talk strategy. I mean, he's really got a handle on it. You know, he will make a lot of the decisions. They have the right to oversee all of the debates that are going to happen in the presidential primary process for the Republican Party. You know, they have to negotiate, and there's memo of understanding for stuff that get done. But the reality of it is the RNC is going to have a very, very strong voice in the number of debates, the location of the debates, the moderators, how they come down for the first time in history. And I don't think anybody thought it could be pulled off. And I give Chairman Priebus credit, because it's going to be better for our candidates if we have a structure that makes sense to give these, you know, candidates an opportunity to talk about themselves and the issues in front of people in the right way without being, you know, overdone by a media that doesn't support them right from the beginning.
Well, the critical question then becomes, I mean, we've got some 30-odd declared candidates. Who is deciding who will participate? Or, you know, how is that being managed?
That will also be managed, I think, out of Sean's office. And I don't think anybody knows exactly how it's going to get done. I certainly don't. And I would be wrong to tell you if I knew how many candidates or what the criteria was. I don't know that yet. I don't know when that'll be public or when they'll actually make that decision. But I do know that I'm a lot more comfortable if I know that it isn't strictly the media deciding that the RNC does have a say in how that comes down.
I'm not positive I share your comfort level.
Well, look, Chris, you're choosing between a liberal media and the Republican National Committee. I still prefer the Republican National Committee than I do to the liberal media.
I do not prefer for the Republican National Committee to choose who they're going to highlight. And that's what I'm afraid will happen. We need to keep a very, very close eye on how that process is managed and how they choose who participates in those debates. Don't you agree?
I agree, but I also believe that everything leads me to believe that, you know, everything about the world today, you know, transparency is something we talked about. The world is a lot more transparent by virtue of the amount of information we have. Everybody's got a video camera on their phone. The world's transparent. I think that we'll see a fair, honest, and open process that will meet the criteria of the candidates. If it doesn't, of course, you'll have all kinds of other problems, and I don't think the RNC or any of us want that to happen.
I hope you're right. I'll just leave it at that. We're speaking with Steve House. He's the chairman of the Colorado Republican Party. I'm Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado. If you want to join the conversation or have questions for the chairman, 303-477-5600. You're listening to KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook, and we've got Steve House, chairman of the Colorado GOP, on the line. It's office hours with the chairman, as it is every Tuesday. Steve, we've got Tim from Littleton on the line. He's got a question for you. Tim, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Thanks, Mr. House. Thank you for what you're doing for the Republican Party. I know this, I don't know if this is a love of yours, but it sounds like it's a lot of work and not always all that enjoyable, but appreciate you out there doing that kind of thing. But the question that I actually have for you is, why is it that the Republican Party doesn't make a statement about these freaking alphabet media stations like ABC, NBC, CBS, and CNN? Why do we continue to honor them with any debates, much less Republican debates? I mean, it just seems like they, you know, in the last go-around, 2012, Newt Gingrich caught the moderator playing sides on this, and he got a thunderous ovation. But, you know, the audience that watches those stations, they don't care. They don't care. That's, like, justified in their minds or something. I just wonder why the RNC doesn't discontinue their participation with the alphabet media.
It's a great question, Tim, and thanks for the call, the question, and the compliment. I think the reality of it is it's trying to get to voters, and especially people who are, you know, in the Republican Party. The best way still today, if you're going to do a debate and have a moderator and do it in an environment like a university, for example, which they do a lot of debates in, you know, you're trying to get information distributed to people in a way that they want or that they're willing to watch and put time into. Having said that, we know media is changing. We know that, you know, social media is changing the world, and there'll be different media types. You know, YouTube's the number one search engine in the world now. There's going to be plenty of opportunities going forward for us to have leverage. This was the first year, really, that the RNC had an opportunity to have leverage over the debates, and it's because media is changing. So I think what we are right now is we are in a transition period where we'll have more leverage, more control, and there will be new media types that will allow the Republican Party to get a much fairer treatment by the media. And I'm anxious for that. I don't think it's going to be completely where we want it to be in the next year and a half, but certainly over the next 5 years, we're going to see dramatic changes.
So it's really a matter of just access to voters. We're willing to participate with these folks who basically want our destruction, but we're willing to participate with them because they do have voters who watch those networks.
Yeah, if you think about it, I mean, the people that involve on the media side, and you know what, I know some really good media people who are actually Republicans. They're not all Democrats, but in general, we know how the media treats the Republican Party and treats the Democratic Party. But, you know, if you have a mechanism, the media, and between that mechanism is between the candidate and the voters, as long as the message is getting to the voters and it's not distorted during a debate process, you use the mechanisms you have, and it's media that's free because you're not having to pay for it as a candidate. You know, that's the way the world works, and I think you use it to your advantage whenever you can.
I think that makes sense. Tim, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. We've got Mark from Black Forest on the line. Mark, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
I was wondering how we can avoid what we went through in 2008. In other words, eligibility of presidential candidates, the whole birther issue that wasted tons of energy. Is there a way we can pre-qualify our candidates, background checks, prove that they're citizens or they're eligible before they get elected to office?
Steve?
You know, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know exactly how that's done. I am sure some of it is done. There's plenty of opposition research that's done between candidates. You know, there's opposition research for the RNC that does nothing but look at the Democrat side. I don't know if there is, though, a formal eligibility sort of process that's gone through. It's likely that it is. I just don't know off the top of my head. So that's something I'll check into, and I'll check back with you guys when we have another call, Chris.
And I think, too, and Mark, thank you so much for your call. I think, too, that big money donors are going to be vetting those candidates themselves in large part, don't you believe?
Oh, I think some they degree. Have to. And you know what? I remember being a candidate for governor myself, and the one thing I did was I did my own background check. I think most candidates are going to have to do that on themselves because they need to know what the opposition is going to know. But if you're trying to get away with a birth certificate issue or an ineligibility issue, that's a whole different ballgame. And I got to believe that opposition research and other things would uncover that in any normal course of event in an election, especially after the question marks that occurred a number of years ago here.
Absolutely. So did you find anything fun on your background check?
Yeah, that was the one where I found out that in 1978 or something, I had registered for the American Law Party, according to the background check, but there was no American Law Party back then. It didn't exist until the 90s, and I never registered for it. So, you know, you got to be careful what you look for and find stuff like that that's very amusing.
That's funny. Mark, thanks for your call. I really appreciate your calls. And if you guys do have questions for Chairman Steve House of the Colorado GOP, 303-477-5600. Want to ask you about the contacts that you made at the spring meeting. I mean, you said that you met with other state leaders, other state chairmen, and so forth. Any that stand out in your mind? Any that are going to that you heard some best practices that are going to influence what we're doing here in Colorado? Anything like that come out of this meeting?
Oh, definitely. I think what you've learned really quickly, it takes you about an hour into it, and we end up having a long meeting with just the chairman of the 50 states together. What you learn is to find the chairman who are in states that are like yours, as opposed to, you know, there's certainly some states. You know, Alabama was funny. We were listening to the chairwoman of Alabama talk about how it was to raise money, or in Texas, you know, where they're so red. You know, they have completely different issues with what they do in those states, and they have different limits on what they can raise. I was more interested in talking to Susan Hutchinson in Washington, for example, or, you know, people that were running states like Matt Borges in Ohio, other states that are swing states, other states that are, you know, purple/red states. I think it's also interesting when you talk to the guy who runs Wisconsin, because, you know, Wisconsin is almost all red now. It's been getting redder and redder and redder. But the one thing Wisconsin doesn't do is it hasn't gone Republican in a presidential election since 1984. So you get to this conclusion that, you know what, the Republican Party does really, really well in midterm elections and doesn't seem to do very well in presidential elections in a number of states, especially swing states.
Right.
We are like that in many ways, although we haven't done as well in the midterm elections and governor's elections in 40 years that we'd like to. But the reality of it is you look for states like that, and then you start looking at how does Ronna Romney, who is part of the Romney family in Michigan and the state chair there, how does she treat her donors, her members? And she produces documentation and quarterly reports and stuff that are just brilliant pieces of information for messaging purposes and to keep people involved. There were lots and lots of things like that that I found that were best practices that I brought back with me.
Okay, so are we gonna start seeing something similar to what they're doing then here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for people who are donors, they deserve a right to understand what their money is being spent on. I think for people who are members and not necessarily donors, they need to understand the direction of the party and what's going on mechanically. There's lots and lots of great ways to do that. We heard about teletown halls. One of the things we're going to do here is we're going to do quarterly teletown halls with county officers and activists, open up the lines to a fairly large number of people once a quarter. Even though, you know, we have this radio show, there are other people who can't access it. We're going to try to do that to really be open and transparent about where we're going with the party and let people really get engaged.
Well, I think that's a great idea. In fact, I was actually thinking about town halls the other day. Like, this is something that we need to do. That would be very cool. Florida is one of those states that's very, very similar to ours. It's obviously a lot bigger. They have 29 electoral votes. We only have 9, but it's a purple state to the max, and they are so red in their state legislature and still have trouble trying to deliver the state for the Republican nominee. Did you speak to Ngoglia? I'm probably absolutely butchering his name, but did you speak to him about the challenges that he's facing, how they're approaching that, how they're going to work on delivering that for the Republican candidate?
Yeah, and you know, not only to Florida, but also if you look at North Carolina and as I said, some other states, you know, Michigan and Wisconsin, the one thing you come up with is voter turnout. It's a very mechanical process. So we've got a couple things working for us and a couple things working against us. So things that are working for us are we're getting much, much better at data. And the amount of data, the quantity, the way we view data, the fact that we're starting to understand that changing behavior starts with understanding beliefs, not just blasting stuff from a messaging perspective at people. You got to understand their beliefs. But when the cities come into play in a presidential election and you haven't invested in the inner cities to develop relationships and to make sure that we're getting our fair share of the vote, even if it's not a majority of the vote in the cities, that's where we end up taking it on the chin and we lose in these presidential elections. And clearly lots of emphasis on minority voters, you know, inner city relationships, understanding the problem and getting better and better at data to be able to develop a relationship that you overlay with great volunteers and people.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's move on to data then, because that's another area that obviously is incredibly important. And here, you sort of think about what we're doing today. Like, you enrolled in a semester long class on March 14th, and you're at midterms now. So
yep.
It's time for your report card. I think there's a few key areas that we need to go through, and I'm curious about our data in particular. The GOP data that they have at the RNC is not necessarily accurate. It's not micro-targeting accurate. It doesn't have the depth of information that, for example, I-360 has. So where are we going with our data? And we've just got a minute left here before the break.
Well, you know, there's been public announcements now about programs where data exchange can occur legally between I-360 and RNC and candidates. And, you know, there are now ways in projects that have been created so that you can exchange all that information and create the data set you want. There's more to it than that, though. There's psychosocial behaviors and data that comes from things like Experian and Amazon and all the social media sites that's all being welded into a data set regarding voters. And voter scoring, to me, is one of the great improvements I've seen in the last 5 years, because it really tells you the tendencies of a voter and their behaviors in the voting process. With that information, targeting and micro-targeting will be so much better than it's ever been. This election in 16 is going to be very different because of the level of data we have.
Well, I sure hope so. When we come back, I want to keep working on this because I had not heard that there was a data sharing agreement between I-360 and the RNC. I want to explore that with you. We're speaking with Chairman Steve House of the Colorado GOP. I'm Chris Cook. You want to call 303-477-5600. You're listening to KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. We've got on the phone, office hours with the chairman, as it is every Tuesday, Steve House of the Colorado GOP. Steve, we were talking about data before we went to break. And, I mean, data is such a critical piece of the get-out-the-vote effort, of the persuasion effort, of the messaging effort, understanding who these folks are that we're talking to, who we need to reach, how they're going to be persuaded. So, is what the constructions that you used when you were speaking of data before we went to the break were passive constructions about what the RNC has done. And so it sounds to me like maybe the RNC is pushing their data set on us. Is that the case?
No, okay. Absolutely not. I think, you know, we have an ability to, you know, really look at what needs to be done. You know that I'm a data and analytics guy. I mean, that's
right.
What I've done in healthcare. So, A, you have to have a data set, and that data set is an aggregation or a collection of data from different sources. And, you know, we were talking about the different sources of data from I-360 and the RNC itself and county data and voter data and all that other stuff. I mean, even some third-party sources like Amazon or Experian. You create a data set out of that, you organize it, and then you make it displayable. Well, the RNC doesn't necessarily care if you display that data through their user interface or use a different user interface or system. The main thing is that you collect all of the data and you upload it into a single database, or at least, you know, as best you can, a single database. So it's useful to campaigns, counties, precincts, volunteers, and everybody else.
Okay. Well, and I guess that's my point. So there was, you mentioned before we went to the break, that I-360, which is a data vendor, and it's very micro-targeted. It's a very extensive, you know, per record. Like the record that they have on Chris Cook is pretty extensive as to what my preferences are, the things that I buy, you know, all that kind of stuff is it's my understanding, is in the I-360 data set. That type of information is not available in the RNC data set, which has been, in many cases, proven to be unreliable. Have you heard that?
Yes, although I believe that problem has now been fixed.
Okay.
I mean, it certainly is. But, you know, and what it really comes down to is, let me give you an example. I looked up my own voter score. And so, you know, I'm somebody who's always, you know, voted Republican, certainly as long as they've had data they could gather on it. And, you know, they don't really look at whether I voted Republican or Democrat, because they're just looking to see if
they better
I voted.
Not know.
They don't know. So they don't know. But what they're looking at is, you know, did I vote in primaries? Did I vote in general elections?
you know, and then they take that and they add that to what are my tendencies, right? I've been registered a Republican for, you know, my entire registration life, you know, all the way back to the time I turned 18. And they start scoring me based on my participation rates and some other data that they get out of, you know, micro-targeting and Experian and other things. And they come up with a score for me.
Okay.
And that score is going to tell them what's the likelihood I'm going to vote, what's the likelihood I'm going to vote conservative, what are the issues I'm likely to care most about, and all of that stuff comes into play. Those kind of data sets, we were starting to see them certainly in 14. What we're going to see in 16 is going to be even better, and, you know, it'll allow us to do a lot better work with getting out the vote, and I think it's why we'll have a better presidential election year than we typically would have had.
Okay. So what part, what decisions and how are you driving, you personally driving that process with the data? Who do we have in charge of it at the Colorado GOP, first of all? And are we keeping this data? Is this all ours? Is it secured? Is it our own, servers and so forth? I'm just, it's such an important part of how we do this that I want to explore this.
Yeah, in fact, today I informed the executive committee and the rest of the chairs will get formal notification tomorrow. So you're getting something before the average county chairman gets it, but okay. It may have been passed out along. But we announced today that Jeff Piotr will be our CIO, our chief information officer. Jeff is a volunteer who's got a long history in business, executive management, company management, et cetera. And Jeff's job for us will be to ensure that data is an asset for the Colorado Republican Party, period. And whether or not we need our own servers or how we store it or what we do with it, and Jeff has already been interacting with people like Craig Steiner and many others on how we bring this data together, how we bring social media together, how we create hard assets. The hard assets in the data world are like email addresses and, you know, cookies that people will allow to be put on their computers so that they can be messaged and social media data. So Jeff's going to be the guy that's in charge of that, but he'll work very, very closely with a team of people, as he has been for the last month or so.
Okay. How did we get Jeff? How did he come to us?
You know, when I first took over as chair, you start looking through the people that had worked with the party. You know, Jeff had been a participant in party politics, financially for sure. And I called him on the phone. We just started the discussion, and I learned who he was, and he understood my data and analytics background, and we hit it off and said, you know what? With your background and experience, Jeff, I can focus on the things I need to do. If you focus on data and you match up with all the sources of data and all the great smart people we have in our counties out there, and he's the right personality and the right intellect to do that. And we came to an agreement he should, and he agreed to do it.
Okay, great. And so he's a paid employee then of the Colorado GOP?
No, he's doing it as a volunteer, just like I am.
Oh, okay. Okay, yep. Great. Who else we got on staff? Who are our paid employees? And I know that this all comes out in the finance report that will be filed with the Secretary of State tomorrow. But can you give us a heads up on who these people are?
Yeah, there's two. We have two employees fundamentally. We have Shauna and we have Ann. Ann is the finance director that we hired when the finance team left after I took over. Shauna's the person who's been in that role for 5 years now, 4 years with Ryan, a year with Dick Wadhams in a different role. Those are the only two actual employees we have. We have RNC employees that are paid for by the RNC, and there's six of them. So you have three people in Hispanic Outreach. You have Ian, who runs the program. You have a data guy and a field guy. That group will expand dramatically over the next 6 months for sure.
Okay. Ian runs the program. What does that mean?
That means he's sort of like the RNC director for Colorado. So his job is, you know, right now is understanding, you know, races, working with me on understanding every House district race, every Senate district, looking at voter totals, how to register more voters, doing the outreach to minorities. I mean, all of those things come under that. And obviously, I meet with him. He works with me very, very directly. As part of the process, essentially he works for me, but you know, Ian's great. He's not somebody I have to do a lot of management with.
Okay. And what's his background?
He's been in politics for a while. I mean, he's not that old. He's probably
I've been in politics for a while too.
I know. Well, you know what? Look, that's one of the things you learn about politics when you get into it at this level is that there are many people who start out very young
and they volunteer on campaigns and they stay with it and they play in different roles and, you know, they become communications directors and they become field directors and they become get out the vote people, and their whole life is dedicated to getting people elected. And Ian is one of those guys, run multiple campaigns in multiple states. He came from Ohio. He's just a very bright young man who has really a good knowledge set about how to go out and get the mechanics of getting voting done.
Okay, so he came to us then through the RNC. The RNC relocated him here to work on Colorado as a swing state?
I don't actually know how he got here. He might have come with a campaign and then stayed and got hired. He's not new. He's been here. He was here during the 14th cycle. He may have been here sometime before, left to come back. I don't know his total resume off the top of my head because at one point we had the conversation, but I don't remember.
That's okay. I'm not trying to quiz you on the okay. You know, complete CV of everybody who's working for us. What I'm trying to do is get a sense for who we have in that office with you down on South Willow, because personnel is policy. Is really kind of how it boils down to. You know, I mean, right. the folks that you have running the organization are the folks who really create the policy actions that the Colorado GOP will take. And you are the head of the ship, you know, you're the captain. But the folks, if you've got folks below you who have, for example, different ideas about how things ought to be done, that's part of the transparency, I think, is to understand who those folks are, what the team consists of. And, you know, it's just as much as understanding the Broncos and, you know, who plays what role, you know, I'm trying to get a feel for who you have in the office and what role they are playing and who, you know, who's paying their paycheck, because that's always important. I'm curious about the data guy you said who is actually being paid by the RNC. Now, is he reporting to Jeff Piotr, or how is that working?
Yeah, he'll work very closely with him. You know, will he report to him directly? I don't know if we've really thought that through exactly. I think he'll continue to report to Ian. You brought up a great analogy, so let's talk about football for a second and the Broncos, right? Most of the people, 90% of the people that are in the office are there as in the trenches linemen. So they're doing the blocking and tackling and the basic work of get out the vote, manage volunteers, keep people interested. You know, maybe the guys that are doing the outreach are a little bit more than that. They're developing strategies, but it all runs through me. I mean, there's no question the buck stops in the chairman's office, and I have to take responsibility for that. But it comes down to trusting them that if I call the play like Peyton Manning does, they're going to block the right people and we're going to move forward. Very, very little, almost no issue-based policy discussions occur with that team. It's about which precinct do we need to get how many votes out of to win an election. All of the other stuff, all of the issues about, you know, what we believe about, you know, transparency or policy on, you know, everything from gay marriage to the economy and stuff like that, that all runs through the chairman and, you know, in cooperation, obviously, with the caucus and the other people in the state who are responsible for policy. Everybody else in that office is really about building a mechanical structure to win elections.
Okay. Is that the way it's always worked? Is that the way it worked under Ryan Call, to your understanding?
I'm not sure because I wasn't there, but I think, you know, now, you know, Chairman Priebus and I, you know, travel together. We talk to donors together, and we sell the concept the same way. I mean, we can't. I voted in 1980 for the very first time for Ronald Reagan. I voted in 84 again for Reagan. And then I've been waiting for another Reagan. We cannot expect Ronald Reagan to come back again anytime in our lifetime. The way you have to deal with elections, and I think we've been waiting for that superhero politician for a long time, is you've got to build a structure, and you've got to make it so that good candidates and great candidates can win, and that you don't lose because what you're doing as a party lacks data, lacks volunteers, lacks motivation, lacks money. You know, if those things aren't there and a great candidate loses, it's on us.
You know, I don't know that I'm even looking for another Reagan, actually, Steve. And I think what I'm looking for is for all the members of my team to actually be aiming for the same goal line. That's really what I'm looking for. We'll continue talking about this after the break. How's that? I've got sure. Steve House, chairman of the Colorado GOP, on the line. Office hours with the chairman, as we have every Tuesday on Grassroots Radio Colorado. I'm Chris Cook. You're listening to KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. It's Tuesday, so it's office hours with the chairman. We have Chairman Steve House of the Colorado GOP on the line. And Steve, before we went to break, we were talking about staffing. I'm going to be direct because that's all I know how to be. I've never figured out how to do anything else. So I hope you'll forgive me. But you have you have an executive director in your office, and mm-hmm. her name is Shauna Cohn, mm-hmm. and she was the executive director under Ryan Call. And according to the website for the Colorado GOP, she is still the executive director. And when you were running for this chairmanship, one of the things that you talked about was removing that executive director position, getting it out of the organizational chart entirely, and having other folks, you know, and multiple folks who would report to you. So why is Shauna still the executive director? Why does she still have that kind of power within the Colorado GOP? And, you know, given her background, is it unreasonable of me to question her loyalty?
Well, I mean, it's not unreasonable for someone who doesn't know someone very well to question their loyalty. I think what you're seeing today, though, with the beginning of announcements, you know, Jeff, you know, joining as the CIO, we'll have another announcement next week. You know, they'll continue until we have the team built out in the way that we want it. You know, I can say honestly, I think she's been a great help. She has a lot of knowledge. You know, as a business person, I wouldn't walk into any situation and replace everybody right off the bat because it wouldn't be in the best interest of the party. So while I'm not interested in talking about exact personnel situations or having those kind of discussions because
I understand
it should be
that.
Personal,
right.
I still am, you know, I am very comfortable 9 weeks into it that we are where we need to be given where we started and that, you know, as the team comes together, and it's clearly coming together now, I mean, that's what announcing Jeff today was about, was the beginning of a process that we wanted to get completed by the time we got to 100 days. Well, 100 days is June 20th. All of the issues that we're describing or talking about, all of the concerns that people might have, will be resolved by 100 days. Now, keep in mind, though, that I didn't campaign on the idea that I would hire certain people or you know, fire certain people. I campaigned on the idea that I'm a business person and I want to run the party like a business, and that's exactly what you're going to see as we continue to roll things out over the next month or so.
Okay, so the hierarchy, the org chart that you talked about during your campaign, has that been scuttled at this point? And
I don't really know what org chart we're talking about during. So here's what I said, and I guess I'll just in general terms, I said that I would probably have a board of directors.
Right.
That is exactly where we're going, right? So a CIO, in my opinion, whether you call him a director or a chief information officer, is a board of directors-like person. So that board of directors, board of advisors, if you will exist within the party. They will be very key people. I have a marketing director or a chief marketing officer that I'm going to bring on board, also probably in a volunteer role. I think we'll have, you know, obviously somebody who deals with everyday, you know, office management sort of stuff, you know, that Shauna herself does, and that may very well be her ultimately. But, you know, the reality of it is the title of executive director is a title. It doesn't necessarily describe what needs to be done. The RNC recognizes the executive director title. You know what? I've talked to them about the org chart and the board of directors that I want to have, and nobody's giving me any pushback whatsoever.
And I understand that, and I think that's great that they haven't given you any pushback. The problem with the executive director position and the title itself is that it lends an air of credibility in speaking for the organization, and I think that's where the danger comes in, and that's where there is a certain lack of transparency that was evident under Call's administration that needs, in my opinion, As an outsider, as a conservative observer, having watched that administration and watched them take down the state of Colorado as they did and underperform the way that they did in 2014, and you don't have to comment on that. I know you're not into bashing him. I feel free to do so. But we had issues that obviously needed to be addressed. That's why you were elected.
is because we had issues that needed to be addressed. If everything was peachy keen, we would still have Ryan Call in that office, and we don't. Part of the advantage, I guess, if you can call it that, that Ryan Call had is that he had staffed the entire organization with people who believed as he did that they knew better than the rest of us how the party should be run and how the state should be run. And so when you say that Ryan Call spoke for the party, he didn't. He spoke for his half of the party. He did not speak for me. He did not speak for the Liberty Movement.
The state party. He represented the state party organization, not the party and all of its members. You know, he has a job just like I do. I mean, if Anil Mittai or Jeff Hayes or, you know, Jim Cook in Larimer County or, you know, anybody out there, you know, has a different opinion about, you know, the Republican Party and what our messaging should be at the county level, they are there to exercise that right. I think as a state party, what you're trying to do is support them and occasionally stand up and support candidates, you know, as asked or deal with issues as asked. But you're speaking for the state party organization. You're absolutely right about that.
Okay. The other problem with the executive, I just want to just finish this up and then we can finish up this discussion. The executive director position does have a great amount of access to the RNC, to personnel, to a lot of other things. And so when you say that it's just a title, it's not just a title, is it?
No. Well, I mean, frankly, what you just said is not as correct as you might think. You know, the director, the RNC director, in this case, Ian, has the relationship with the RNC. Doesn't mean that the executive director doesn't as well. They have a relationship with the RNC, but the executive director is a person who's managing bills and signing checks and, you know, watching how we are doing financially and creating, you know, budgets for the chairman and, you know, making sure that personnel are where they need to be and doing what they need to do. I mean, it is truly a position where you have to manage an office full of people. And as a chairman, I don't have time to do that. I'm going to spend my time fundraising and getting out in the field when I have an opportunity. But the reality of it is it's not about the real power of control over messaging or the RNC. It's about managing the office in a way that's effective. And then, of course, you know, look, I've developed relationships with the people that are there. And, I, you know, there are people there that I have a very strong feelings about their capabilities. The other part of it is when you're there that long, you learn a lot. And you have a good opinion, and I've been very pleased with the opinions I get in this first 9 weeks. I don't always agree with them, but I'm pleased that I get the opinion because they're usually informed opinions about what's happened in the past that I need to know about. And that's part of transition, and that's part of transitioning a business or a state party in my mind.
Okay. Steve, how can folks ask you questions and get in touch with you if they have concerns or kudos or whatever?
Or they just want to give me money.
Or they just want to give you money.
They can reach us at, they can reach the website at collogop.org, or they can reach me at steve@collogop.org. And I expect to see lots of movement on our website going forward as well. That's one of the things we're working on.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. Yep. Steve House, chairman of the Colorado GOP, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. Up next, you know, I want to talk about Hillary because it's time to talk about her foreign policy failures. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.